Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
This hour of Bump and Stacy brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Well, he got to see some behind-the-scenes information from the Seahawks War Room to find out exactly why Seattle made the picks they did and when they made those picks. John Boyle of Seahawks.com joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. John, your latest column is up on Seahawks.com if anyone wants to check it out. It is a really, really cool behind-the-scenes look at what went into some of the Seahawks' decisions. So I'll start with not a question about a particular pick, but is there any one piece of information or a story or a decision that you learned about that was most surprising when it came to this article?
You know, staying away from individual picks, I think it's probably just, you know, especially those first two rounds, it's just like how true to the board they're staying. I say the first two rounds, it's hard. The board's a little more muddled at the bottom, and honestly, where I'm allowed in the room, I can't see it as well. So I'm not saying they didn't stick to the board. It's just harder to tell as things are going so fast. But those first two rounds, you know, I think people assume, like, yeah, they say they took best available, but they really reached to fill this position. But I mean, every one of those picks, it was just very clear. Okay, this is how it's set up on our board. You know, obviously, you know, I think we all knew defensive line looked like the biggest need probably. And, you know, maybe in the second round, interior line or something like that. But, they just, you know, they were true to it. And they said, you know, boom, boom, boom. These are the guys we have highest up right now. We're going to take them.
Boyle, 2 years in a row, I feel like that's been the approach. Before that, there are some stretches, I think, and I think others would agree as well. These past couple drafts, has that been an emphasis? I mean, we hear John talk about it, we hear Pete talk about it, but somehow it seems like they've been influenced in the past. I mean, what is that the feeling that you got, that there was no budging, no matter what happened, this was going to be the approach?
I think so, but I also think, you know, it probably has, you know, we talk about like why last year's draft class was so good. I don't know if it's as much, okay, they were true to their board on the day of, but it might have also been how the job they did, you know, in the process leading up to it, of setting that board, of, you know, like John Schneider's talked about a whole bunch of, you know, they're doing a better job, they feel like, of getting to know the players, the competitors, kind of what drives them. And that's kind of the theme they've talked about with last year's class in particular, just sort of the competitors they got, the guys who were ready to come in and challenge right away. You know, of course, it kind of worked out that, you know, yes, Charles Cross was way up high on their board, but he also came into a position of obvious need. So in some cases, it's sort of the need matched the best player available, so that guy's going to come in and start. So, I don't think in past years, I'm not going to pretend I've been in that room every year and can tell you, but I don't think it's been that they've gone all over the place, you know, reaching for guys it positions a need in past years, and that's why they've struggled. Although John Schneider did say, you know, in a few cases that has led to problems. But I think it's more that, you know, the months and months of work, really a year of work into that process of how they're evaluating guys.
They had been talking, particularly John Schneider, in the weeks leading up to the draft about the lessons that they'd learned from self-scouting their own approach in previous drafts. John, when you were listening to some of those conversations about Schneider talking about what he learned, were there any specific players, drafts, years that came to mind where you thought, oh, I bet that was a learning opportunity?
You know, maybe so. I don't want to single guys out.
Right, like, of course.
That, you know, they messed up. I mean, but we can all look at, you know, guys they've drafted in the early rounds that haven't panned out as well. And I don't think it's always one thing. It's, you know, maybe one of those was where John felt like they did reach a little bit. Maybe one is where they just didn't have the guy nailed as well as they thought. And sometimes you just get crappy injury luck. I mean, Rashad Penny was a guy that, you know, was never injured in high school and college, and that was a big reason they liked him so much. He was so durable and healthy. Then he comes to the NFL and gets hurt over and over again. So sometimes you just get unlucky as well.
Now, John, you were in the draft room, right?
Yeah, I was kind of in and out. I wasn't in there for the entirety of every round, but I was kind of popping in and out when the Seahawks were getting close to picking, and then I'd go back to the media room and work and just sort of back and forth all day.
Awesome. So what's the feeling there? Is it tense when you walk in? Is it tense? Is it relaxed? How do the Seahawks operate under these situations?
It's pretty relaxed. You know, I don't have any others to compare it to, but I think it's just sort of the culture Pete Carroll and John Schneider built around that building. It's just sort of relaxed place. And like, yeah, when they're on the clock and they're trying to figure out, you know, I wrote about this in the story, but they're, you know, they're taking their full time some of these picks to see if a trade's gonna materialize, or, well, you know, Jackson Smith and Jigba, you know, they love the player, but they were having some extra last final conversations with their medical people, because obviously he, you know, as John Schneider alluded to, his evaluation was a little tougher because of the injury last year. So, you know, it's not like tense and that people are yelling at each other or anything, but you can just sort of feel the tension raise up a little bit when that clock's counting down. But otherwise, you know, they got music playing, they're cracking jokes. It's, you know, it's a pretty light, pretty loose place. I think that's, you know, when you feel like you're prepared, you get to that point and you feel like you've done all the hard work already and you're just sort of letting it play out.
We're talking with John Boyle of Seahawks.com, covers this team for Seahawks.com and has a really cool feature up on the website right now with some behind-the-scenes insight into the Seahawks draft room. You talked about Jaxon Smith-Njigba and some of the concerns they had. Can you take us back through some of the conversations you were seeing about that pick in particular, specifically when it comes to concerns over his health?
Yeah, you know, going back to when we talked to John Schneider about the pick afterwards, someone asked him, did that kind of complicate the evaluation? And he's like, you know, to be quite honest, it did. And if you think about, you know, if he's a healthy player in 2022, they're probably not picking him at 20. They're probably having to just make a decision much higher in the draft on him. So, you know, basically what, you know, the specifics of that one, I'm not in actual conversations close enough that I'm hearing what's been being said in every conversation, but kind of the gist of it was just, it's clear they like the player, but they just want to make sure that they were confident in the medical side of it. Of, you know, is this going to be okay? So, you know, as I, again, in the story talks about, they're pulling Sam Ramsden, who's the head of the, you know, player health, and Strickland, Dave Strickland, who's the head athletic trainer. They're pulling those guys into conversations when, you know, if you're drafting a guy with a total clean medical board, those guys are in the room and available if you need them, but you're not necessarily talking to them about each pick.
John, I was extremely excited when they picked Zach Charbonnet. Now, you have Ken Walker over there. Obviously, he's your guy. And Ken's only a rookie going into his second year. Do you think the Hawks had a conversation before or after the pick saying, look, Ken, you're still our guy, but this is how we operate. We have a stable of backs, and Zach's going to help you out.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I feel like maybe Pete Carroll, John Shire even said that in a press conference. I'm not positive on this, but I thought one of them said, you know, they called Ken right away. But you know, I'm sure that conversation's been had, you know, much like with Geno Smith and the quarterbacks, so they were talking to him about that. Like, look, if the guy's there, we're going to take him. And I think Ken Walker's got to understand that position. His opportunity came up because of an injury last year. And that's a position where it's very rare for a lead back to go 17 healthy games all year. And even if, you know, Ken Walker is healthy for 17 games, that's awesome, but you don't want him carrying the ball 25, 30 times a game because he will get worn down. So if you have a second back you like, especially to play the style of offense Pete Carroll wants to play, I think having really two starting caliber backs is almost a must for this offense. You know, I've made this point a few times before just talking to friends, but I think fans got a little skewed perspective because of Marshawn Lynch. Like, he was such a rare player that he could run as physical as he did, and he went really from when they got him in 2010 until he started finally getting some injuries in 2015. He went 4+ seasons missing one game, and that was a fluky back spasm kind of situation where he was like game day scratch. So fans, I think, got so used to that. I'm just like, you plug this guy in, he's available, he's going to run hard, and he's going to get you 16, 17 games. That's not the norm with that position. It's just really not. So you need, if you're going to be a team that the running game is important, and it is for the Seahawks, then you really need, as we saw last year, a second guy who can come in and be a starting caliber guy if your initial starter does get hurt.
But what I love about the article that you have, it does feel very like fly on the wall, where you don't interject too much. You're just writing quick, just kind of observations of what you're seeing. At one point, John Schneider asks for them to like turn the TV down a bit because he's trying to figure out about this trade Arizona just made, to find out the details of the deal they made with Houston because they had their eye presumably on Anderson or maybe some other picks up there at the top, right? Like, it's very cool insight. You also mentioned at one point, at least at one point, John Schneider being on the phone listening to someone kind of talking about potentially moving up. How seriously do you think they considered moving back from 5 or 20? Or rather, a better question, since I'm sure they seriously considered it, is how close do you think they ever got to moving back?
It's, you know, I can't ever really say how close. I think, you know, if people just read that story and weren't following the draft that closely, be like, oh, wow, they almost trade here. But like, that's the normal. Like, that's by far the most normal thing, is to at least have one team call and be interested in. More often than not, you know, it might not work because they're not offering enough. You know, they don't have the picks to make it work on your end, or you just love the player. I didn't get, you know, again, I wasn't on either end of the call, and I'm only hearing half of what John Schneider said. I didn't get the impression they were ever too close to trading away from 5 because of Witherspoon. They just really liked him. And then with when they took Jaxon Smith-Njigba, they, you know, I put this in the story, but they had four guys left with first round grades as they got to that middle part of the round. And I think, you know, they really wanted to get one of those guys at 20. So it would have, you know, they would have had to have been pretty blown away, I think, to move back there. Because I think they knew if they were moving back, they were in danger of not getting another first-round guy. Now, as it turns out, they feel very fortunate they did with Derek Hall, who lasted till 37.
John, I know you probably don't have a definitive answer for this. Kind of just want to know what you think. Do you feel that Jalen Carter wasn't drafted because of his personality, the issues that were attached to him, or that they just valued Devin Witherspoon more than they did Jalen Carter?
Boy, yeah, I'm not going to pretend to have. I mean, I've never been in those conversations. I didn't, you know, from where I am in the room, you can't read all the boards and see everything. So I couldn't tell you where they had Jalen Carter, what, you know, where he was in there. So it's hard to say, you know, what their evaluation on him was, what they thought of him. I just know on the Witherspoon side of it, they just loved him, loved the player. And I don't think there was ever much consideration of taking anyone once, you know, the guys ahead of him. As Pete Carroll said, you know, they love some of those quarterbacks, and I think everyone knows they like Will Anderson a lot. So that might have been a tough decision if a quarterback they liked or Will Anderson was still there. But with how the picks went off ahead of them, I think it was a pretty big no-brainer just jump on Witherspoon.
All right. I want to move out of the draft room, though John's article is up on Seahawks.com. You guys should absolutely read it. It's a great kind of behind the scenes look at what was going on for the Seahawks. I want to talk about some of these rookies. We only got about 3 minutes left with you, John. And in addition to being behind the scenes in the draft room, you also got to be on conference calls with rookies and, you know, have since talked to them, whether at press conferences or in other interviews. Who's really made an impression with you or kind of like a lasting impression where, you know, later that day you were thinking, man, I really can't wait to see what this guy does this year?
I mean, the easy answer is Kenny McIntosh for anyone who's heard his call with the media. So he, you know, he gets called by the Seahawks and he's just all emotional and in tears. And it's a good probably 20, 25 minutes till he has to talk to the media. And he just picked up right where we left off. I mean, he could not get through that interview, but he was still funny and like getting in some funny lines. And then someone asked about his brother who had played at Wazoo. And he goes and he's like yelling for his brother, Dion, to come. And, at one point he put his brother on the phone. It was just chaos, but it was really funny. And it's, you know, those guys are always easy to root for when, for whatever reason, they maybe slip pretty far in the draft. And you can sense they're, you know, they're excited about the opportunity, but also it was a very emotional and tough week for them to last till the seventh round. So that's going to be an easy guy to root for. And just the personality seems really awesome, too.
Is there a common theme with the personality of the guys that the Hawks draft? Do you see how they would fit into the culture here in Seattle?
You know, I think I'll defer to the people making these decisions. And the word that Pete Carroll and Josh Heupel both threw out right away when asked that question was toughness. It's, you know, these are guys. Schneider kind of gave this little nugget to the media. They have every card of a player they draft has all these different symbols on them that mean different things. Some are good, some are bad, and it's just kind of a shorthand of what we like or don't like about the guy. And one is a hammer for a guy who's tough, and it, you know, that's not just a, you know, hard hitting safety or linebacker. It can be a running back or receiver, just anybody who they think plays really tough and physical. And just about every player they took had a hammer on his card.
He is John Boyle of Seahawks.com. You can read his latest up on Seahawks.com right now. Thanks so much, John.
Of course. Happy to do it.
Thanks, we appreciate John. It. Thank you. All right. This hour of Bump and Stacey brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Thank you again to John Boyle of Seahawks.com for joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, big one tonight. Kraken looking to take a commanding 3-1 series lead on Dallas. What's the real headline?
As we all know, a 3-1 series lead is the safest lead in the playoffs.
Oh, yes.
You can never. That is a sure thing.
Just take
thing.
Your foot off the gas pedal.
Yep, just ask the Warriors.
Never seen it. Never seen a team come back.
Never seen it.
Not in my life.
We talked with Ryan Callahan earlier, who is for NHL on ESPN. He is also a former player for the Rangers and the Lightning. What sticks with you from Ryan's interview with us?
He said that the way the Kraken plays applies pressure at all times. They're always pressuring you. Pressure, 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 which I love. And when you can apply pressure with four lines, and I've heard commentators say this before. I think Mike Lefko pointed this out, and then the commentators kind of backed him up. Mm-hmm. That you can't tell which line is out there because everyone's playing with the same tempo, the same movement. I love the chemistry of this team, but that's what stood out to me most. He goes, look, they are going to pressure you the whole game.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about the depth that this team has. Oh, also, as an update for you guys, we don't know yet whether Jared McCann will actually be playing. Dave Haxtell not committing to that, but Dave Haxtell said this from Kate Shefty of Seattle Times, that McCann will take part in pre-game warm-ups, not just like practice, pre-game warm-ups. So he may be appearing tonight. Not committing to him being the lineup, but keep an eye out for that one. We're all watching closely. Curtis, during Hype Train, now, Bump, you said that the Kraken would win. You're going to be in attendance. You're going to go get your sweater and all your gear. Curtis, you said that the Kraken would get six goals. Why are you so confident?
Yeah, because, you know, Jake Oettinger's overrated. He's nothing
washed.
More. Yeah,
simple
he's washed
that.
Already. He's 24 years old and washed.
Completely washed.
Yeah, he's never seen anything like this Kraken scoring attack that comes in waves. All four lines moving as one.
Yeah. Imagine this team if they had. Now,
incredible.
We've talked about like how it's really nice to have a lot of depth, seven goals from seven scorers on Sunday versus having like one superstar. But imagine this team if they did have one superstar. Mm. You know what I mean?
I think they have one in the making. And they got one waiting in the wings. So I'm talking about Maddie in the making and Shane in the wings. Imagine if they continue to have this depth and then you throw in some young superstar talent. Ooh, wee.
What's next? I already know it's Bumps.
Headline.
Here we go.
Headline number two. The Lakers pulled it off last night. 104-101. They are now up 3-1 on the Warriors. What's the thrill?
Curtis, don't be too excited, man.
Can't
calm yourself
believe
down.
I'm saying this, but it's all thanks to Lonnie Walker. Lonnie Walker scored 15 in the fourth quarter alone, coming off the bench. Those were all of his points. It was the first Lakers bench player to score 15-plus points in the fourth off a playoff game since Kobe Bryant did it exactly 26 years ago from that game. The Lakers can obviously close out the series tomorrow. ESPN's Mike Greenberg thinks, though, that they should rest their starters. You don't need to clinch it in five games. You can keep playing.
Mike, you crazy. You don't let a team like the Warriors hang around. And you know what's great about Lonnie Walker? Hopefully there's three more of watching.
I never
Lonnie
thought
Walker
you would start a
this.
Sentence that way.
Lonnie Walker.
You know what's great about
bench.
Lonnie Walker?
You know what's great about him?
You know what I love about Lonnie?
You know, he's the fourth. So there's some other Lonnies.
Kind.
Yeah.
There's some other Lonnies watching Lonnie
I like Lonnie
do
fourth
thing.
Quarter Walker. I think they should only have him come off the bench in the fourth.
My man came in. And Coach Ham must have said, hey, you got the green light, young fella. Or he made one, and LeBron gave him the nod, like, you keep shooting. My guy was only averaging 6.3 points per game and got her done. But we have to also point out the other guy who contributed to this win, who I had to apologize to. Because my man has been balling this whole series, this whole season. You got to give love to my guy, Austin Reeves.
Yeah.
21 points last night as well. So you get Austin with 21. You get 15 from the bench from Lonnie. Schroeder had 10. He tried to trick the game off at the end with unnecessary back behind the back pass. But Lakers looking good right now. Where my text at? Bunch of haters last week. Bunch of haters. Don't let the Lakers win this. Y'all not going to hear the end of this.
I am not saying this is Lonnie Walker. I need you to separate Lonnie Walker from the question that I'm going to ask right now. Have we done that? Okay, question. Palate cleanser. New question. Has there ever been a performance so impressive from someone? Now, this can be NBA, NHL, NFL, baseball, whatever. Has there ever been a performance you guys have seen so impressive from an athlete that you thought, this guy's it? Like, this guy's the next big thing, and he never did anything.
Oh, yeah. He did it for, like, 3 months. Remember Linsanity?
I was just going to say that.
Remember Linsanity?
Yeah.
I wanted Jeremy Lin to be a super-duper star so bad. He was for, like, Bump said, a couple
it's
months.
It's so wild, though, when someone takes off like that, and it's like... And I don't even mean like, who's that Patriots running back that had like the game of his life? He had like 200 yards and four touchdowns or something crazy and then like never even started again.
Oh.
I forget his name. It's like, it's not
Jonas
Noah.
Jonas Gray.
Yes, Jonas Gray. I don't mean like, yes, that is a great example. But what's wild is when they keep doing it. Like imagine if someone had a season like that. Or like Thomas Rawls. Like Thomas Rawls had like, what, 12 games-ish? Where he was averaging more yards per carry than... even a really a healthy and good Adrian Peterson at the time and just wasn't doing it.
Wasn't it? I feel like Fitzpatrick does that all the time or used to do it all the time. He'd throw for 500 yards. You'd be like, maybe. and then he'll toss 3 or 4 interceptions. You're like, nah.
Ooh, good question about from the 253. Stacy, what do you think Bump would let you hear about the most? The Lakers winning a championship or him shooting a 75 to beat his previous best of 77? I actually think it might be the 75.
Yeah, because we win championships all the time.
Okay, next headline.
Nothing to boast
Here we go.
About.
We're moving on.
Headline rewatch.
Headline number 3, the Colts have asked the NFL to review possible tampering between the Commanders and former quarterback Andrew Luck. What's the real headline?
And if anyone has the right to ruin Andrew Luck's career, it's the Colts, okay? Look, they already didn't protect him with a good offensive line. If he's going to get back into the NFL and risk injury, they're going to be the one to let him get injured.
Good old Colts.
I know.
Now, you talked about this earlier. You said, was it them
what
not
do we
being
think
able to protect
ultimately,
him?
Yeah, was it the Colts getting this amazing talent and then not giving him a good enough offensive line? Or was it Andrew Luck being an amazing talent and just not having a love for football?
It's Andrew Luck being an amazing talent and having kids and a wife and other interests and making enough money to not have to worry about stuff anymore to take care of his family. There are so many things that factor into this. Some guys are just football or nothing. Some guys are Booby from Friday Night Lights. Just football is everything. And some guys just are deeper thinkers and have other interests and play football just because they're good at it, not necessarily because it's life or death and they love it. So that's where I think Andrew falls. And he kept getting injured. He could not stay healthy to save his life.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of things that went on there.
We were talking about athletes who had a great month, a great couple games, a great season, a great whatever, and ultimately didn't meet your expectations. But for a minute there, you were convinced that they were the next great thing. Someone texted in, Deho Lee. Was their suggestion.
I mean, he was pretty old when he got here. He was like 36 or something. He could hit a mile, though.
Brock Purdy. Well, Brock Purdy.
He was a rookie last year.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with Brock Purdy. What if Brock Purdy, if Brock Purdy never does anything again, that would be a perfect answer. Because it's like Brock Purdy ultimately became Offensive Rookie of the Year as a candidate.
Crazy.
Didn't end up winning, but I know. Poor Chris Olave, man.
Yeah.
He got bumped out of there
no
by
love.
Brock Purdy. Not at all. Speaking of Brock Purdy, Chris Olave, we're taking a look around the NFL next with NFL headlines. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
We are taking a look around the NFL before we get to what I need to know before we get to the dugout, which means I could use some questions now. So while we're looking around the NFL, I got some stories, including where the Seahawks rank in strength of schedule ahead of when the schedule is coming out. So while we do that for 10 minutes, if you wouldn't mind sending in some questions, it would be greatly appreciated. Any question you have, text it now to the Mac and Jack's text line, 866-979-3776. It could be about sports, not about sports, whatever. Text it now, 866-979-3776. Let's get to the NFL. We might have had a bit of a spoiler on a Super Bowl rematch. Now, we know it's going to happen. Normally, that's in week one. Either it's the opening game or certainly opening weekend. But Travis and Jason Kelce's mom, Donna, may have spoiled when the rematch is happening with a Facebook comment. So it's not actually the original post. She has this long post on Facebook where she talks about the Chiefs-Germany game that's going to be in November and kind of like all her theories about the schedule, blah, 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 blah. And someone says that she may have two trips over there if the Eagles are playing the Chiefs in Germany. And she says, as a response, and this is the newsworthy thing, Chiefs play Eagles week 2 in Arrowhead. Donna, what are you doing? I don't think you're supposed to say anything.
I automatically thought of Richie Valens. You know who that is, Richie
Valens? Yeah, Richie Valens.
Oh, Donna.
No, yeah, that's exactly
Come on, Donna.
Donna.
That's family business right there.
So if the Chiefs then have a week 2 home game, that means they
Isn't
also have
weird?
Week 1. So they start with 2 home games in a row.
I'll tell you what that is. A little bit of East Coast bias.
It's a classic East Coast
classic
bias.
Classic East Coast bias.
But looking
anywhere
at their,
east of Seattle.
Looking at their opponents, that probably means, what, a Kansas City-Cincinnati rematch in week one?
I mean, it would be a good game. You said Kansas City-Cincinnati?
Yeah.
I would love that as a week one matchup.
Title game rematch,
yeah, I would. Yeah. I would be very, very down for that as a week one game. I would carve time out to watch that. Yeah. Is it AFC East, AFC West? Are they facing each other this year?
I don't
know. I'm not entirely sure. Oh, well. Anyways, yes, so we may get... It's kind of weird to see the Super Bowl rematch happening in week two. Normally, it's like that Thursday night game, the first Thursday, yeah. Or if certainly like a Sunday night game.
Yeah,
at least opening
back.
Weekend. Isn't it kind of
running
weird?
Running back right now.
Yeah.
What are we waiting for?
We'll see if Donna's right.
Oh, Donna.
Something tells me Donna's right.
She is right.
Moms know
she's
a lot.
She's got sources on both sides.
She's got a lot of intel going on here. Wide receiver Stanley Berryhill became the third Detroit Lion player released in the wake of suspensions handed down from the NFL for violations of the league's gambling policy. Lots of gambling stories happening
what
here lately.
What school did he go to?
Bear down, baby.
Let's go.
University of Arizona.
That's exactly right. That University of Arizona.
Me. Things go down in Arizona.
I know.
Spend some time there.
All right.
It was a simple misunderstanding.
Anytime it's an Arizona player, Curtis is always going to find a way to defend it. It's an FBI investigation. They were just asking questions.
They were, yeah.
They
didn't find the money for DeAndre Ayton.
Yeah, personally, I think there's a real good shot that the FBI, maybe their kids just wanted to go there and they were, you know, touring the campus. That's all that was.
Heck of a program.
CBS has the 2023 NFL strength of schedule. We already know all the opponents, so this isn't like new information. The regular season schedule comes out. Wouldn't it be wild if the postseason schedule came out? The regular season schedule comes out for the NFL Thursday, 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern. This is the strength of schedule from CBS. The Seahawks are tied for 12th. Not good, not bad. Middle
of
the road.
They were 11th last year. Came in 11th.
Yeah.
So.
They are tied for 12th. Opponent combined winning percentage of 517. It's tied with the Broncos, and the Chargers are also there at 12th. The Cardinals are 11. The Rams are 9. The 49ers 15. So no one NFC West team is facing a significantly worse situation than the others. Let's go to easiest and hardest schedules. The toughest combined opponent win percentage faced by any team this year is going to be faced by the Eagles.
Good.
They are going to have they are going to have the toughest schedule. The Dolphins are going to have the second hardest schedule. Patriots third. And this is actually surprising to me. The Cowboys and Giants, although the NFC East was really solid, they're playing each other, yada, yada, yada. You get it. No surprise here then that the two easiest schedules come from what division? The NFC South. The Saints and Falcons with the easiest strength of schedule? Easiest strength of schedule,
easiest
I guess.
Strength of schedule. Yeah. Let's go, Carr. It's set up for you. Who's going to... I'm so infatuated with that division, Stacey.
You have problems.
Who is going to win that
I
division?
I don't understand why the NFC South is suddenly your, like, side pet project where you are so fascinated to see what happens. Like, you can make a case
There's
for every
there.
Single... What is your case
stories.
For the four teams in the NFC South?
Tampa Bay. You really believe in Baker Mayfield?
No.
My guy's the number
two
quarterback.
That's not intriguing.
New Orleans Saints. Derek Carr, low-key, one of the most productive quarterbacks in the NFL the last six seasons. Carolina. Bryce, are you the guy? Can you handle it? And then Atlanta Falcons might have the best 1-2 combo in the backfield in the league. NFC South. Ain't nothing going to happen out there. But
none
it's
of
just,
this convinced
it's
me.
It's just...
None of it
I'm
convinced
interested.
Me.
None of it?
The only thing convincing me is Bryce Young with Carolina.
Not even Atlanta's run game? Their run game could be filthy.
Okay, yeah, Bijan Robinson. Yeah, okay, okay. I take it back.
All right.
John, speaking of the Buccaneers, you know who just got signed to backup Baker Mayfield? One John Wofford. You know those random quarterbacks you always remember?
Like Seahawks fans exhaling.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, thank God. He's out of the division.
Get him out of the West.
My guy looked like a JV quarterback in stature, but was tearing it up, man.
Slinging it.
God, yeah, he's one of those. What's a player that, like, no one else really knows, but you remember because he beat your team one time? John Wofford is that guy to me.
John Wofford. I would say, people might remember him. Walters, remember the Arizona State quarterback? Walters back in the day?
Oh, Andrew Walters? Yeah.
He threw for, like, 400 against us. I'm like, who's this guy?
Oh, that's a tough one.
How about
one.
A guy who's done it not once, but I think twice, Colt McCoy.
Yeah.
With the Cardinals and the Giants.
That's a great answer. That's a great answer. NFL.com came out with their rankings of the entire 2023 draft class. They have the league's worst. The Minnesota Vikings, they said, had the league's worst draft class. They drafted six players. Wide receiver out of USC, Jordan Addison, was their first pick.
Yeah, and I think that's a great addition to the club. Obviously, you want to play some good defense. Their defense failed them last year, but I'll take Addison.
It's kind of weird because the Vikings weren't like widely panned in a way that was very obvious. Most drafts graded them with a B.
Yeah, you know, you just there's just nothing to really believe in. As long as Kirk Cousins is your quarterback, you ain't going to do nothing. You might look good for about 13, 14 weeks.
Yeah.
But you know how Kirk does. You know how he does.
Also, a little bit of an update here. We already know, I think Kenny McIntosh signed his rookie deal. Mike Morris now has signed his rookie deal. So Seahawks getting to work there. We have not talked about Mike Morris a lot. He's kind of like not the overlooked and forgotten draft pick, mm-hmm. but with so many draft picks, we've talked a ton about the day one and day two guys, those four guys at the top. We've talked about Kenny McIntosh because he stole our hearts. We've talked about the guys that they got to build up the trenches. And then
I have a little thing on Mike Morris.
You did. Well, you have, yeah. being that it's your job. But I think collectively, we've kind of overlooked Mike Morris and Jarek Reed.
Yeah, we have overlooked. That's what happens when you slip a little bit down the draft. But Mike Morris, he's going to play. He's one of those depth parts for that defensive line. And Jarek Reed is going to make this team and cause havoc on special teams.
Who's a guy, a day three guy you are most excited about for the Seahawks?
Day three is...
Anyone. It can be... I know that you're big on Cam Young. So
yeah, is Anthony Bradford? Is he a day three guy?
Yeah.
Anthony Bradford, because you want to see what this O-line looks like. Phil Haynes will be competing with him. Evan Brown will be competing. If they hit with Anthony Bradford, they have, and Olu from Michigan, they have their line for the next 4 or 5 years.
All right, you guys, get your questions in for What I Need to Know. Text them now to the Mac and Jacks text line, 866-979-3776. Your questions, our answers next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners will try to rebound in Game 2 of their series against the Rangers. Pre-game show starts at 5:30. First pitch is at 6:40 p.m. right here on Seattle Sports. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company. And we are wrapping up Bump and Stacy with What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. We are not going anywhere. We have another hour with you guys, but it is going to be The Dugout. All Mariners 1-2. Jose Caballero going to join us at 1. Aaron Goldsmith, Shannon Dreher also joining us for that hour. But before we get to it, time for your questions. So let's get to it. We could do sports and non-sports. Do you want to start with sports or non-sports?
Non-sports.
Non-sports. A question for all three of you. What I need to know, what was your favorite original NES video game? We're dating ourselves.
Mike Tyson Punch-Out.
Yes. Really?
Yeah, you get the rhythm.
I never played that.
Boom, 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 boom. Belly shot. Bam, whoa, whoa, yeah. Whoa.
The correct answer is Mario. Curtis.
Sure, yeah.
Mario / Duck Hunt. They're the same thing, but I never played Duck Hunt.
You know, Stacy just didn't venture out of the games that came with the NES.
I'm not a big gamer. Like, I've had three consoles. I had a Nintendo, or I had the NES, and I had Mario for that one. Then I got a GameCube, and we never even got anything for it. It was like gifted to us. We were like, what is this? I had N64 and we had Mario Kart and Donkey Kong and that's it. Those are the and Snowboard Kids. Those are the four video games I played in my entire life. And I'm good with that.
Deep.
Very small rotation.
That's it. What I need to know.
Oh, what's Curtis?
Oh, Curtis.
On NES?
Yeah.
Man. That was a little bit before my time, but I have played Wayne Gretzky's hockey.
A little bit before my time.
Yeah. This guy.
A little bit before my time.
Oh, we're talking 80s.
Shut up, Curtis.
90s, maybe.
he doesn't have one.
I know. We're moving on. Which non-high-round pick do you see having the biggest impact for the Seahawks this year? Non-high-round pick. I'm going to make it just day three. I'm sorry.
Picks.
Texter, I'm sorry if you meant day two. I'm making it day three on your behalf.
Day three.
Non-high round.
I would have to go with... I'm looking at... You know what? Kenny McIntosh. Kenny is going to be a back...
Okay.
Like we haven't seen in a while. Versatile back, can do anything you ask. I'm going Kenny McIntosh.
I'll go Cam. I'll switch it up. I know that you really like Cam, so I'm going to steal your answer. What I need to know, do the Seahawks, are they going to do an international game? And if so, is Bump going? Bump would be going to an international game, although I don't think that they are slated for one.
Man.
So I'm switching to a non-sports. What I need to know, what's the best type of Girl Scout cookie? They be out there.
They be out in them
streets.
They
be out there.
Hey, and big ups Girl Scout cookies. the young lady selling them, inflation is real because prices are gone up.
Let me tell you what.
For real.
Girl Scout cookies, like, you hear those prices now and you're like, beg pardon?
I'm like, I was going to get four boxes.
But now I'll just get one.
I'll go two.
Two?
I'll go two.
The correct answer is tagalongs.
It's the peanut butter ones.
Yeah, tagalongs.
That's it?
Yeah, it's in order. Tagalongs, Thin Mints, Samoas, everything else. Curtis, I don't care about your answer.
I'm glad that...
I like the Do-Si-Dos. Those are a good
You
one.
Like Do-Si-Dos? Well, yeah.
What flavor is that?
They're the peanut butter ones.
I feel like you're just... What?
That's the one with the chocolate on the outside?
No, with the peanut butter cookie.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
The peanut butter in the middle.
What I need to know, have you ever walked out the door with two mismatched shoes, and how far did you get before realizing, asking because I did that three times in my life?
No, I haven't because I don't have shoes that resemble each other that much, but I've definitely walked out with like two different socks on. I got two different socks on right now because someone did laundry and put them together, mm-hmm. and I just trusted whoever did it and put socks on.
I've walked out with a shirt on backwards, two different earrings on. Never two different shoes though.
Curtis, that's what I haven't done that though, huh?
Curtis, you've probably done that.
Yes, because I have multiple colors of Vans. So in the dark, a blue, navy blue van looks a lot like a black van. So I've come close. I think I've caught myself, though. I don't think I've ever like shown up to work before.
From the 360, if you could bring back three past Seahawks players, who would it be? So let's say like in their prime, you get to choose these three players in their prime.
I'll take KJ.
Any era. I'll say any era. You'll take KJ from any era?
Yeah, KJ. Because imagine him and Bobby right now in their prime on this defense. Most definitely.
I'll take Walter.
And then, yeah.
I like the tackles they have. But like if I get to choose, like I might go offensive line, defensive line. I feel like I should take someone from 2013. Maybe Marshawn.
And then I bring back Doug, too.
What I need to know, if you could only have bacon or coffee in the mornings for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Coffee.
Coffee. Yeah. Not
coffee
even close.
Show.
Not even close. Could you live a life without bacon?
Yeah.
I could do it.
Yeah, I could do it. I don't eat bacon that
often. I don't
love
bacon that much. What is a food that you're like, I truly would not want to live? Like, I need this food in my life. And I would choose to give up something to have that food in my life.
A burger.
Just burger in general.
Burger in general, yeah.
Curtis, what about you?
I don't think I could go without pizza.
Yeah.
Because it's so versatile, too. Like, you can put any combination of toppings on it.
The 206, when we talked about which three former Seahawks would you bring back, 206 said Brock Heward three times. Cortez Kennedy, most popular answer.
Adrian James, Adrian Peterson, and Jerry Rice.
Rice.
Yeah.
Don't forget Derek or Devin Hester. Of course, you got
Dwight Freeney.
Dwight Freeney.
Yeah, Dwight
you got
Freeney,
Snacks Harrison.
Kevin Williams. Franco Harris.
What I need to know. What was your favorite Halloween costume growing up?
My favorite? It was in college. I created a character called the Palouse Ranger. And what I did was... the Palouse Ranger. I put
like
on,
a Power Ranger?
Yeah. I put on all my like tights. You know how football players wear their tights. I had my tight pants on and my tight undershirt. And then I put like football pads on. I had glasses on. I made a cape out of a shower curtain. It was legendary.
Jeez.
It was legendary.
Are you going to bring back the Palouse Ranger this year?
I'm too old for that.
I think you should.
I'd be so embarrassed.
I think you should bring it back. All right, you guys. That was what I need to know. That will do it for Bump and Stacey, though. We aren't going anywhere. Instead, we're going all Mariners for the dugout from 1 to 2. Mariners infielder Jose Caballero joins us next. Don't go anywhere.